This is the Stella Corner School Podcast, episode 24, Let's Talk Turkey Day. Hello and welcome to the Stella Corner School Podcast, found online at stellacorner.com. My name is Jacob Burton, and thank you for joining me in this episode. In this episode, our long-awaited discussion on Thanksgiving. That's right, talking turkey technique, some potholes that you may or may not be falling into, plus some tips, tricks, and methods for all the fixins, including gravy, mashed potatoes, stuffing, and so much more. So break out your chef coats and aprons. It's time to go to class. And this is the Stella Culinary School Podcast, found online at stellaculinary.com. My name is Jacob Burton, and thank you so much for joining me this episode. It is coming up close now. We are getting ready for Turkey Day, Thanksgiving, here in the United States. And really something that should be celebrated all around the world if you don't. I know the Canadians do it, but they've already had their Thanksgiving. They do it early because they can't wait. Neither can I. Usually at around, September, I really start craving for some turkey, stuffing, gravy, all the fixins for Thanksgiving. And, you know, I can't believe that we've been together for so long, me, you, the Stella Culinary community, doing these podcasts and the videos, and we have yet to really do a serious series on Thanksgiving. Shame on me. And this is something that I've been wanting to do for quite a while now. And when I do my culinary boot camps, the Q&A segment, when we get into the October, November area, is always made up of tons of people asking questions about Thanksgiving, sharing past failures, asking, hey, why did this go wrong? So in this episode, we're going to really drill down some of the major techniques and things that you need to be aware of for Thanksgiving. And I'm going to assume that that if you're listening to this episode, that you're going to be the one cooking Thanksgiving. You're going to be the one having people over to your house on Thanksgiving. And even if you're not, you're going to be learning a lot. We're going to talk a lot about technique, a lot about some theory, even some food science thrown in there. So you can learn a lot from this episode, but I'm going to be talking to you in the context of, you know, you're hosting this party. Here are the things that you need to concentrate on. You're going to have people rolling up to your house for Thanksgiving. And, you know, a lot of times you have people bringing some dishes, bringing some sides, helping you out in the kitchen, but you have to be the master of your domain. You're going to be the person to pull this Thanksgiving off. You're going to be the one to make it great or not. So no pressure. But hey, look, we're going to get you there. I'm going to be with you not only through this episode, we're going to talk, but at the end, stay tuned for our announcements because I'm going to talk about how you can actually get some support from myself and the Stella Culinary community leading up to Thanksgiving. So if this episode generates any sort of questions, then you're going to have the ability to ask them, and I will be answering them in an upcoming podcast episode before Thanksgiving, a few days before, at the very minimum. So that way you will have all of your questions answered, and you'll be ready to rock. All right, so in today's discussion segment, and this is traditionally where we discuss things, hence discussion segment, we're going to switch it up a bit, and I want to jump right into turkey, because then in our next segment, we're going to be talking about sides. But from an execution and workflow point of view, I think it's important to discuss turkey first, because that's the centerpiece of your Thanksgiving. That's what most people are going to be cooking. And if you're not cooking a turkey, well, then, you know, I'm sorry. If you're not cooking a turkey, you are breaking the mold and you're being that cool, untraditionalist dude, which is completely fine. Or dudette. Either way. But you probably have stuff on lockdown. You know, chances are if you're doing a prime rib or whole roast and a goose or all that stuff, and you're foregoing the turkey, then you probably don't need my help. If you do, we always have the Stella Culinary School forums. You can go post a question there and be happy to talk to you about prime rib. But for me, Thanksgiving just isn't Thanksgiving without turkey. You have to have turkey on Thanksgiving, right? I mean, it's almost a sin not to. And the problem with the Thanksgiving turkey is it always comes out dry. For the most part. You know, I mean, let's be honest with one another. The turkey is the centerpiece of your Thanksgiving meal, but it's usually the least of everything there. You know, I mean, it's usually dry and stringy and overcooked, and hopefully whoever's making the turkey can make at least a decent gravy to help moisten up that meat, right? But it doesn't have to be that way. Your turkey does not have to be dry. It does not have to be overcooked and stringy and chewy. It does not have to be doused with gallons of gravy to make it edible. But for that to occur, for you to actually produce a really good turkey, we're going to have intervention. All right. Let's talk presentation, because this is the sticking point with everybody. I need to be honest with you. All right, that's my job. I got to be honest with you. I got to bring it straight. If you whole roast your turkey, it will never be that good. There, I said it. Sorry. I know you got that carving knife all sharp, and you got that brand new platter that was shipped from, you know, China or wherever it was. Maybe you went to Williams-Sonoma and spent way too much on it. And you have this vision of yourself and you're crazy, you know, Thanksgiving sweater with the knitted turkey on the front, standing at the head of your dinner table and carving this turkey and slicing it up, and it looks just like out of the commercials where it's steamy and crisp and evenly golden brown all the way around, which, by the way, those turkeys usually aren't even cooked. They brown them and add steam. But hey, we're talking about your dream here, your vision of standing at the head of the table carving that perfectly roasted turkey. And even if you can make it look perfectly roasted, it will not be perfectly roasted. And that's because whole turkeys do not cook evenly, especially when you truss them, when you have them all bound up in a ball. And a lot of turkeys, they come trussed, or the first step in the cooking tutorial or recipe, or is, hey, truss the turkey or whatever. And trussing is awful. It's awful. You know, I mean, yeah, you heard it here first. Maybe not, but I'm, you know, it's funny to me that trussing a bird, where you tie the bird up into this tight ball, still persists to this day, when really it, whole roasting a bird in the first place isn't the best way to do it. And if you are going to whole roast the bird, tying it up into a tight ball actually doesn't make it cook more evenly. Sorry to say, but it just doesn't, you know, and I know I'm breaking your heart, and one of you guys is probably, you know, throwing something against the wall right now, all pissed off at me. But hey, look, don't shoot the messenger. I'm here to help you out. I'm here to give you the information you need to make an awesome turkey. And when you whole roast it, you're going to have to choose between the lesser of two evils. If you like breasts that are moist and juicy, then you're going to have undercooked, chewy leg meat. And if you like dark meat, yay, that's tender and flavorful and juicy and falling off the bone, right? Then you're going to have overcooked breast meat. This is because the white meat and the dark meat cook at vastly different rates. And you have to understand that and be ready to deal with that if you want to produce a great turkey on Thanksgiving. Now, you look at a turkey. A turkey is a flightless bird. I mean, it can flap its wings and fly for a short distance, but it's all fast twitch muscle fibers that make up that breast. So because of this, there's not a whole lot of connective tissue. There's not a whole lot of collagen or even fat in those breasts. And the turkeys have been bred to have larger breasts because people love that big, fat, white breast meat, right? That's what they're after on a turkey. So these turkeys are carrying around these big old breasts on them, right? And they're constantly walking around on their hindquarters, on their legs. And so because of this, for structural integrity and to be able to move that bird around the yard or around, you know, wherever it's grazing and eating and pecking and all that good stuff, those legs need to be pretty sturdy and strong. So they're going to have a lot of slow twitch muscle fibers and collagen. And the collagen is, we've talked about this in previous episodes, where it is the connective tissue to triple helix of gelatin that binds muscle to itself and also to the bone structure. So it's what allows that muscle to move and to do work. So in general, the more work a muscle does, the more connective tissue it's going to have. The more connective tissue it has, the chewier it will be, unless you take the time to break down that connective tissue, usually using a low and slow cooking process, either slow roasting, braising. We discussed this way back when in our series on cooking techniques. So you can see the dilemma you have as the cook when you take that whole turkey and you pop it in your oven and you whole roast it, because you have that image of you standing at the head of your table and carving a beautifully roasted turkey. But the problem is, unless you just, you know, all you care about is the picture you're going to hang on your wall later, that turkey's never going to be that good. Now, what makes it even worse is, again, look, it, you guys are going to get mad at me, but don't shoot the messenger, okay? What makes it even worse is, so number one, people insist on roasting their turkey whole. It's tradition. I get so much pushback on this. If people could just stop wanting to roast their turkey whole and embrace the fact that, hey, I actually want to serve good turkey that's, you know, properly cooked on Thanksgiving. If they could stop with the whole roasted thing, right, then they would just be so much further ahead of the game. But not only do people insist on roasting their turkey whole, but they insist on stuffing it as well. Oh, Jacob, no, please don't. Please don't tell me not to stuff my turkey. How am I going to face my family without a stuffed turkey? Well, I'll tell you how. Because the food that you're going to give them is way better, right? And good food always wins. So here's the deal. Call up the Butterball hotline or the turkey hotline. You know those 800 numbers they put on the outside of their turkey? And like, if you got an issue, you just call us up and you ask us your question and you'll say, hey, you know, I bought a 24-pound turkey, which is way too big, but I bought a 24-pound turkey and, you know, I have no idea how to cook it. What should I do? And they're going to give you some like crazy number where, well, put it in your oven for 325 and cook it for 3 days. And also, too, we put that little pop pin in the turkey breast. And when that pop pin pops up, you know your turkey is done, right? So go ahead and do that. And then if in doubt, use an instant read thermometer and take the turkey thigh temperature. And when it's at 185 degrees Fahrenheit, you can pull the turkey out and it's going to be done. Right, it's going to take you, you know, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 days to do that. All right, have a nice day. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling Butterball. Now, here's the thing. Butterball, and look, I don't even know if Butterball is still in business, to be honest with you. I assume they are. So, I'm just picking on them because they're a well-known turkey brand in the United States, right? I mean, it's not my fault they got their commercials everywhere. So, hey, there's some brand management for you. They're getting a lot of free shout-outs here on the Stella Culinary School podcast. So, but they are a company. And just like any company, especially in the United States, they are terrified, absolutely terrified of you suing them, right? And it's very realistic for you to get your family sick with salmonella food poisoning on Thanksgiving Day if you serve them undercooked turkey. It's just like chicken. So you undercook the chicken, you undercook the turkey. Well, what's going to happen is if there happens to be salmonella in that bird, your family's going to get sick. And you're going to be really pissed off at the people who sold that turkey to you because they basically ruined your Thanksgiving, right? You guys spent, you were just tag team in the bathroom for the rest of the weekend. I mean, I'm sorry to be crude, but that's just how it all comes out, right? No pun intended. So they're not stupid. They're going to cover their ass because, quite frankly, they don't give, you know, they don't care if your turkey's dry. They care that you're not suing them, okay? And you're not going to be able to sue them over a dry turkey. A turkey that makes everyone sick in your family and puts you in the hospital, yeah, you could probably sue them over that. But your turkey being dry, no, But they also know, too, that you're stubborn and that you have to stuff your turkey because it is tradition. So follow me here and kind of visualize this. A turkey is trussed, so you stuff it, right? You take all your stuffing, you prepare it, you put it inside the bird, and then you tie it up, you do the whole trussing thing to close up the cavity. Now, as the heat from your oven comes into contact with that turkey, with the exterior, that heat moves from the outside in, right? It doesn't heat from the inside out, right? I mean, that's just, I mean, basic science. So, as that turkey starts to cook, it's cooking from the outside in, because that's where the heat is coming from. It's coming from the outside air contained within your oven. Now, as that turkey continues to cook and continues to cook and it continues to cook, that stuffing that is inside your turkey is going to be basted and dripped with the turkey juices, right, that are in the meat, that are in the cavity. The stuffing is actually in contact with the turkey during the cooking process. And this is the number one argument for stuffing your turkey, and really the only argument, in my opinion. People say, well, what about, I like it because of the drippings. The drippings help to flavor it and make it delicious, but we'll get around that later. So now, by the way the heat diffuses into your bird, starting on the outside and working its way in, it is very obvious to us that your stuffing is going to be the last thing to heat through. So now you take the temperature of your bird, and your bird is at 165 degrees Fahrenheit, which, by the way, is the maximum temperature at which you should be pulling your turkey, and quite frankly, even lower, but we'll get to that in a second. And at 165 degrees Fahrenheit, salmonella will die within 7 seconds, so almost instantly. So the bird will be safe to eat at that point. But that's the meat, right? What's the internal temperature of that stuffing that is at the core of your turkey? It has yet to reach 165 degrees Fahrenheit, so it is yet safe to eat. So if you stuff your bird, then you have to drastically overcook it to make that stuffing safe to eat, which is why all the turkey hotlines out there are going to cover their ass by telling you to cook the turkey to an ungodly temperature. And they will tell you that, and to tell you to pull it at a specific temperature, I mean, it can range anywhere from 170 to 180, 185 degrees Fahrenheit, which is just nuts. And they're not even taking into account the fact that a large turkey is going to have minimum 20 degrees of carryover cooking. And that's because, again, heat works, or you have the way that any sort of thing cooks through heat is by diffusion. So the outside's going to heat up first, and then that outside, that hot exterior is going to transfer heat inwards through diffusion. And that transfer of heat is going to continue until the core is hot and you've reached the desired internal temperature. And you're using a gradient heat, meaning so if you want your turkey to be 165 degrees internal temperature when it's done, right? Well, you're not cooking the turkey in a 165-degree oven because that would take forever. And it's a really inefficient way of cooking the turkey. So most likely, you're probably cooking your turkey at what? Let's just call it 325. I mean, there's all different sorts of approaches, which we're going to go over here in a second. So you're cooking your turkey at 325 internal, right? So that means, 325 in your oven, which means that you have a gradient. The outside temperature that you're using to cook your turkey is much hotter than the desired finished internal temperature. So when you hit that internal temperature, you're going to pull that turkey from the oven. But that turkey doesn't instantly say, oh, hey, I'm in a room temperature now, so I'm instantly going to stop cooking. I'm going to drop. I'm going to cool, right? No, the heat that is still maintained or retained on the surface of that turkey is going to continue to move inward because that's what heat does. And that turkey will only start to cool off and stop cooking when that heat gradient equilibrates. So again, the outside of your turkey is going to be hotter than the inside of your turkey. So when you pull your turkey from the oven, that hot exterior is still going to be transferring heat to the inside of your turkey. Now, once the inside of your turkey is the same temperature as the outside of your turkey, now that heat will start to migrate outwards from the core in, and your bird will start to cool, and it will start to what we call rest, right? That's the whole resting process. So because of this, and that's why carryover cooking occurs. So you cook your turkey at a really high temperature, and then you pull it out of the oven, and you're pulling it at, you know, 165, 170 degrees internal temperature. And then you're going to have another 20 degrees of carryover cooking. Now, here's the thing. Here's the kicker, right? At 155 degrees Fahrenheit, muscle fibers fully contract and are no longer capable of clinging or binding to moisture. So basically, at 155 degrees Fahrenheit, your muscle fibers will be dry. Now, this isn't an instantaneous thing. So as soon as you hit 155, all of the moisture immediately evaporates from the turkey, right? But the longer you hold it at those temperatures above 155 degrees Fahrenheit, the drier your bird will become. So as you can see, there's so many pitfalls and so many reasons why you wouldn't want to roast your bird whole. In fact, the only reason why people who understand these concepts would still choose to roast their bird whole is because of tradition. It's because it's what's expected of them. And for whatever reason, they would rather stick with tradition and serve a dry bird than start a new tradition of having awesome turkey. Now, if you want to have awesome turkey, I've got the solution. And we've got a couple of different ways to do this. First of all, if you want a compromise with the whole roasted bird, I would recommend spatchcocking. And spatchcocking is a preparation method where you take the backbone and you cut the backbone out of the bird. This works for chicken and turkey. I actually have a video on spatchcocking a chicken, and it works awesome. And what this does is once you remove that backbone, and you can open up the turkey, you press it down flat, and it evens out the cooking temperature. It evens out the surface, so the whole turkey cooks much more evenly. Now also, too, because of this, because it's not stuffed, and because it's not wrapped up tightly in a ball, there's more surface area exposed to the heat of the oven, so it's going to cook a lot faster. In fact, in a past boot camp, we did a 24-pound turkey. We roasted it, but we spatchcocked it. We took out the backbone. We butterflied it flat. We cooked a 24-pound turkey in 2 hours and 20 minutes. Yes. No, it's true. It's true. And guess what our oven temperature was? 475 degrees Fahrenheit. Oh, yeah. That's because when you spatchcock a turkey, the way that I like to do it is I'll put it on a wire rack so it's elevated above the baking sheet, and I will pour boiling water over the skin. And what this does, you'll notice this, immediately the skin will start to shrink and become tight. And the boiling water not only makes the skin tight, but it also will dissolve the collagen in the skin. And it is this collagen that will bind to both fat and water in the skin. And as long as that collagen exists, that skin will maintain fat, maintain water, and it won't become crispy. So the boiling water treatment will make that skin tight, and it will also allow that skin to crisp because it's breaking down the collagen, which allows the fat to render out in the skin and also the water to escape the collagen's grasp. Next, you want to sprinkle it with some salt and be very generous. But all that water that I poured over the turkey, I'm leaving that in the bottom of the pan. Okay, so again, visualize this. The turkey is spatchcocked. The backbone is taken out. It's laying flat, skin side up. rib cage down. Okay? So what this means is the skin of the bird, all of the skin of the bird, is exposed to the hot heat of the oven versus the underside of the bird, where it's just the rib cage and the opened up legs, are going to be exposed to the steam that is generated by the water in the bottom of the pan. And about every 30 minutes, I will check this steam level and add more water. Because that steam is really good. Even though the steam is technically cooler than the air in the oven, steam is much better at conducting heat energy than dry air. So you have this steam from the underside of the bird, which helps to keep it moist during the cooking process, but that steam is also conducting heat energy to the underside of the bird, thus speeding up the cooking process. So you have a dual cooking method going on where you have steam on the bottom and hot, dry heat on the top that is crisping your skin. Now, to make sure that your bird does not dry out during the cooking process, you want to do a couple of things. First, it's always a good idea to brine or to dry salt. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes because I have tons of information on brining. And I could spend, you know, a couple hours boring you with all the details. But basically, the salt will partially dissolve the muscle filaments in the bird, and it will allow those muscle filaments to cling to moisture during the cooking process, keeping the bird more moist. Now, I actually prefer, when I'm working with poultry, to do what's called a dry brine, where you just dry salt the bird instead of putting it into a wet brine. And I prefer that because, number one, it's not adding more moisture to my skin, which I later have to drive out during the cooking process to make that skin crisp. But also, too, it saves me space in my fridge. I mean, you know, these turkeys are big. And it's not the only thing that you're preparing on Thanksgiving, right? So you have all sorts of stuff just packed into your fridge, and now you have to find a container that's large enough to hold that that's large enough to submerge a 15-pound plus bird in water. And oh, by the way, it's got to be there for like 2 days, you know. So it's very inconvenient. So what I'll do if I'm doing the spatchcock method is I will weigh the turkey and then add 0.75% by weight of the bird of salt. So what this means in practice is, let's just pick a round number. Let's say that the bird was 1,000 grams by weight. Okay, you multiply that by 0.75, and that's going to give you 7.5 grams of salt. Okay. And so I'm going to dry salt the bird. After I spatchcock, I'm going to take out the backbone. I'm going to dry salt on all sides. And then I'm going to allow it to rest for a minimum of 24 hours in my fridge overnight. Okay? And what's going to happen is that salt will migrate into the bird. It will season the bird from the outside in. And it will also, as that salt migrates into the bird's muscle tissue, it will partially dissolve those muscle filaments, allowing them to bind to moisture during the cooking process, giving me a more moist bird as an end result. Now, when it comes to actually spatchcocking the bird, you can do one of two things. First, you can go really low and slow, or you can go really high and fast. My preference is low and slow, but it's usually too inconvenient, to be honest with you. And if you dry salt the bird, dry brine, or you wet brine it first, and you give it the boiling water treatment, you can blast it high and fast, and it's going to come out really good. So what's high and fast? Well, high and fast is setting your oven to 475, 500 degrees Fahrenheit, and just letting that bad boy rock. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, well, the skin is surely going to burn by that point. And what you'll notice is within the first 45 minutes of the cooking process, your skin will look like it's almost done after 45 minutes. It'll be like a medium golden brown. But to take it from that medium golden brown stage to a burnt stage takes way more time than you would think, and more time than it's going to take to actually cook that turkey to a finished internal temperature. And by the way, at this point, we have yet to add any oil to the bird. All right, it's funny because a lot of times I will rub oil on things because oil helps to conduct heat. in my testing in the past, I have found that specifically when you're spatchcocking and you do the boiling water treatment, it's actually better to just leave the skin alone. Sprinkle a little bit of salt on it, but that's about it. Now, if you have the time, what I would recommend is you spatchcock the turkey about 2 days before. Okay, so you're removing the backbone, you're laying it flat, you're butterflying. Then you add your 0.75 to upwards of 1% salt, or up to 1% salt by the weight of the bird. And by the way, if you are brining or dry salting yourself, make sure your turkey doesn't come previously brined. A lot of times that occurs. So check the label, and if it says, you know, 8% solution added to this bird, then you know it's already brined. And if you brine it again or add more salt, your turkey's going to probably come out overly salty. So there's a word of warning for you. But if you're planning ahead and you want to do the spatchcock method, which is a solid technique for whole roasting a turkey or a chicken, and really the only technique that I would use when keeping a bird whole, cooking it, take out the backbone and give it the boiling water treatment. So bring, you know, a good gallon or two of water to a boil, ladle the boiling water over the skin, and then pat it dry and salt it with the 0.75 to 1% salt by the weight of the bird. Place this in your fridge for minimum 24 hours, preferably 48, uncovered. So the dry air in your fridge is going to wick away moisture from the surface of that bird and make that skin crisp a lot faster and more readily. However, I have done this all in one day without brining the bird, without letting the bird sit overnight in the fridge. And if you're going to do this, I would actually recommend just buying a bird that's already brined, right, that has that solution injected. But you can spatchcock it, give it the water treatment, blast it in your oven at 500 degrees, 475 for 2 hours to 2 hours and 20 minutes, and it's going to be good to go. Now, that's for a large bird. What you need is a good instant read thermometer with a lead attachment on it, so you can actually have the thermometer in your bird while it's roasting, monitoring the temperature with your little readout display on the outside of your oven. Now, I prefer the Chef Alarm by ThermoWorks, and I'm going to put a link to them in the show notes because I have gone through so many different lead-style alarms, and I break them, and they don't work, they're not that accurate, and they really frustrate me. So Chef Alarm is the only one I found that I actually like, and they're not that expensive, and they're totally worth it. So as you're roasting this bird, you have your Chef Alarm or equivalent thermometer on the outside of your oven monitoring the temperature. And you're going to set that internal temperature to 155 degrees Fahrenheit. And you're going to set that temperature to be the, you're going to set that thermometer inside the leg. Because again, you're going to have some carryover cooking. And probably with this, especially since you're blasting at such a high temp, you're probably going to have 25 degrees of carryover cooking. And that's because I'm a dark meat kind of guy, right? That dark meat, for that collagen to break down, it needs to get to a higher temperature for an extended period of time for that meat to be tender. So the breast will be, you will be flirting with drying the breast out, which is why I actually prefer to remove the breast from the bird before cooking. But if you're spatchcocking, you want to make sure that your breast is cooked and the legs are tender and juicy. So set your internal thermometer to beep at you when you're at 155 degrees Fahrenheit, reading from the leg and thigh region of the bird, and then pull it out and let it rest. Now, it's important to note that muscle fibers lose their ability to hold on to moisture at temperatures above 125 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you start to cut into your bird before it drops to an internal temperature of 125 degrees Fahrenheit or below, you're going to see a lot of juices running out of your bird. So that's another argument to make sure you plan enough time to allow that bird to actually rest properly before you slice it. And the thing is you can always do the bird way in advance, right? I mean, not too far, like not a day in advance, but you can do get the bird done in the morning, let it rest at room temperature for a couple of hours, and then do what we call a retherm in the oven, where you're just popping it back into a hot oven for, you know, maybe 20 minutes just to get that exterior piping hot before you slice it and serve it. So again, I'll put a link in the show notes to my spatchcocking chicken technique. And I might even spatchcock a turkey and do a video of that before Thanksgiving. I'm just kind of running out of time at this point. But that's a good way to do it if you just insist on roasting the bird whole. But the video that I will be shooting, I went and bought my turkey today, and I will be shooting it in the next couple of days. Actually, I'm going to shoot it after I record this podcast, but it'll be available maybe a day or two after this podcast is released, is my approach to processing a whole turkey. And so I like to get my turkey, hopefully, like the Monday of Thanksgiving, right? You can even get like the weekend of Thanksgiving. And make sure you plan some time because you want to thaw that bad boy in your fridge. A lot of those turkeys come frozen. And, you know, for safety, it's going to take, you know, the safest way to thaw your turkey is to do it in your refrigerator. And at refrigeration temperatures, you know, a 14, 15-pound turkey can take about 48 hours, 2 days, to fully thaw in your fridge. So plan ahead. But then what I'll do is I'll take the turkey and I will break it down. Just like how I break down a chicken. And we have a video on that in our culinary knife skills video index. So I'm just removing the breast. I'm removing the wings, removing the legs. So I'm left with the carcass, right? And the carcass is great for making stock. And turkey stock, that's like my secret nuclear weapon for Thanksgiving. Having a freshly made turkey stock on hand before Thanksgiving Day is going to give you a massive advantage, right? You're going to use that as a base for your gravy. You can use it to flavor your stuffing, right? So we're not stuffing the bird and flavoring it with those juices that drip down and risk getting our family sick. Instead, we're actually taking that roasted turkey stock and we're using it to flavor that stuffing that we're going to bake later, which, is, by the way, is going to give us even more control. And you can use any leftover turkey stock to make soup the day after. And one of my favorite things about Thanksgiving is the soup, right? So breaking down the turkey, number one, is going to give you the ability to make a turkey stock a couple days out and have that on hand, which is going to give you, again, a massive advantage. But also, too, it's going to allow you to treat the breast and the leg and thigh separately. And anyone who thinks that you can't have a good presentation because the bird is no longer whole is crazy. Right, there's all sorts of ways that you can slice the breast, roll up the leg, do a roulade, roast the leg separately, do the leg confit. There's all sorts of great ways that you can cook the breast and the leg and thigh separately and then combine them later on the same platter. And it looks absolutely beautiful. So again, the whole major advantage to breaking down the turkey ahead of time is you get to treat the leg and thighs as the individual pieces of meat that they truly are, right? You're not trying to do a one-size-fits-all solution to cooking your bird. So number one, whether you're dry salting or brining, you are now going to have much more room in your fridge to get this done, right? Because boneless turkey breasts and legs take up way less space, whether they're in a wet brine or a dry brine, in your fridge than the bird whole. Now, the breast itself, you can actually leave attached to the carcass if you want and roast the carcass with the breast. So basically, you're roasting the breast attached to the breast bone. And this is called a turkey crown. And it looks nice as part of that, you know, the presentation. But I like to remove the breasts and make them boneless because that way, I have that turkey carcass or that rib cage to add to my stock ahead of time. Also, too, for most applications, I will debone my turkey legs. Now, I love turkey legs. They're my favorite part of the turkey, except maybe the giblets or the neck. The neck is really good, but usually I'll just put the neck in the stock. But the neck's a good Scooby snack that you can just gnaw on. Anyways, now the biggest pain with the legs, though, is those feather bones in the actual drumstick region of the turkey. And what that is the turkey has to hold up so much weight that it's actually connective tissue that calcifies in the leg. So you start biting into this leg and it's super bony, right? And it makes the leg tough to carve and slice. And when you start getting down to that leg portion, which is really delicious, you're constantly having to battle with these feather bones. So my solution to this is I will debone my turkey leg, and I'll treat it just like my chicken leg. And we have a video on that in our show notes on how to debone a chicken leg and thigh. But the same is exactly true for a turkey, except you're going to have those feather bones that you want to remove as well. So you remove all those feather bones, any big strips of connective tissue, and now you have a beautiful boneless leg and thigh that you can cook any number of ways. You can pan roast, you can make a roulade, you can do all sorts of great stuff with it. And then when it comes time to slice it, you're not going to have to deal with those feather bones. So you're going to have these clean slices of dark meat on your plate. And because you're not cooking your turkey leg and thighs at the same time and temperature as your turkey breast, you're going to have way more control over the end result, which means better, tastier turkey. And that's what it's all about, really. I mean, come on. You're listening to this podcast, you're listening to me wax poetically about turkey because you care about food. You love to cook good stuff. Right? In my boot camps, or when I'm teaching students in general, we have what's called the primary flavor law. And in my opinion, there's not a whole lot of strict rules or laws in cooking. Most of them you can break. But the one law that you never break or transgress is the primary ingredient or primary flavor law. And that says that when you pick your primary flavor, anything you do to that flavor or to that ingredient has to enhance it. If it doesn't enhance it, then you are not doing your job as a cook. So demanding and being stubborn and saying, no, 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 I will roast my turkey whole, even if it does give me an inferior product, is breaking one of the only true laws of cooking, which is do not transgress the primary flavor law. Everything you do to that primary flavor must enhance it, must make it better, or else why do you even cook, right? So breaking down the bird and treating it separately is really going to be the way to go. And in my video that I'm going to shoot and have up before Thanksgiving, I will be showing you how I would process it. And quite frankly, I don't really have a game plan right now. I'm still kind of rolling around in my head what I'm going to do, only because there's so many options, all right? But I know for sure that I'm going to be making a turkey stock and then cooking the turkey breast and the turkey legs and thigh separate from one another. Now, when it comes to your turkey breast, some ideas for that is simply anything that you can do with a chicken breast, you can do with a turkey breast. Now, remember, turkey breast is extremely lean. There's not a whole lot of connective tissue. There's not a whole lot of fat. So once you overcook it, it's dry. It's done, right? So you want to normally use a high heat cooking method that's really fast and kind of gets that turkey breast done and doesn't expose it to heat for too long a period of time. If you braise a turkey breast, it's not going to come out that well. It's going to become dry and fibrous pretty quickly. All right, the one exception to this is sous vide cooking, which we'll talk about in a second. Now, for your turkey leg, you can do anything that you would normally do with a tough cut of meat with your turkey leg. So you could braise it, stew it. You can cook a confit, which is nice because if you cook the turkey leg confit, then you can do it a few days at least ahead of time and just store it in the fridge underneath its cooking fat. And the day of, you roast the turkey in the oven, right? Or you roast that turkey leg in the oven to crisp the skin. Okay, so it makes it very convenient. Or you can just simply slow roast the turkey leg and thigh. You can also debone it like I was talking about. What I like to do is I take the tender that is on the underside of the breast, that it's a different muscle from the actual breast meat, and it's rather large on a turkey, and I will remove the main tendon portion, and then I will take that tender and I will wrap it up in my deboned turkey leg and thigh, truss it, and then roast it. And so when you slice it, it gives you a nice cross section, beautiful medallions, but also too, it allows you to use that tender. You're basically taking this tender that dries out during cooking, and you're wrapping it in fatty, yummy, delicious dark meat. Okay, so it helps. That adds a bit of a buffer to that tender, keeping it nice and moist. Now, if you have an immersion circulator and you do sous vide cooking, then that's really my preferred method for cooking turkey for Thanksgiving because it's very convenient. And I'm not really going to go too far into the science behind sous vide cooking right now, because that's going to be a whole other podcast episode in and of itself. But basically with sous vide cooking, you have what's called an immersion circulator. You place it into a water bath. It heats that water bath to a precise temperature within 1/10 of 1 degree Fahrenheit accuracy. And it allows you to cook tender cuts of meat or tough cuts of meat to a very precise temperature. And you have a lot of control over the accuracy of the cooking. So for my sous vide friends, what I like to do is cook my breast packaged with butter. So I'll do a little bit of butter in a Ziploc bag is fine. You can use a vacuum pack if you want. But a little bit of butter with some fresh thyme and dried apricots. And I will sous vide the breast for 4 hours at 140 degrees Fahrenheit, 60 degrees Celsius. Now, what you'll notice if you aren't familiar with sous vide is you say to yourself, well, hey, 140 degrees Fahrenheit, that's way below the temperature at which salmonella is killed. So how is that safe to eat? Well, salmonella, just like any sort of bacteria, will die on, or most bacteria, will die on a thermal death curve. Okay, so at 165 degrees Fahrenheit, it takes salmonella 7 seconds to die. So you take the turkey breast, you sous vide it with butter, apricot, some fresh thyme, dry thyme, whatever blows your apron up. And you hold it there for 4 hours, and it's going to give you a perfectly cooked, perfectly tender turkey breast. Now, for me, I love crispy skin, but it's just, it's too much trouble to keep that skin crispy when you're cooking something sous vide, like the breast. Okay, you can get it done with the leg and thigh portion, but it's just, it's simpler for me to just take that skin, save it, maybe use it for another purpose. You can throw it in your stock, actually, the skin, even though it adds fat. If you roast it first, it'll add a lot of good flavor too. But you just take that breast directly out of the bag, slice and serve. Now, here's the nice thing about cooking your turkey sous vide is you can do it in the package a couple of days in advance. And the only thing you have to remember is not to break the seal on that bag. So even if you're cooking it in a Ziploc bag, you're going to press all the air out by using the water displacement trick, where you just kind of lower the bag into the water and you press out all the air. Then you have some butter and herbs and whatever other aromatics you want in there. And then you're going to cook it sous vide in a sealed environment and pull it out and chill it. Just drop it into an ice bath, and then you can place it in your fridge for, you know, a few days easily. Now, when you break the seal on that bag, the proteins will start to oxidize, and this is called warmed over flavors. And this is why cooked protein never tastes the same when you reheat it the next day. Because say you cook a steak, you place it in your fridge, it is exposed to oxygen as it cools down, and or really after it's cooked, it's exposed to oxygen because on your plate and you're eating it. And then when it cools, because it's been oxidized, it will have that warmed over flavor. Now, because you're not breaking the seal on your sous vide bag until right before you serve it, then you're not going to have to deal with those warmed over flavors, which means this approach is extremely convenient and awesome for your execution, because you can cook the turkey breast again ahead of time in your immersion circulator. And then the day of, you simply set your circulator to 140 degrees Fahrenheit once again, and about 30 minutes before you're ready to eat, you drop the turkey breast in. Now, that doesn't mean that the turkey breast is going to self-destruct at 35 minutes, and you got to serve it right at 30 minutes. What that means is it's going to take at least 30 minutes for that turkey breast to re-therm or warm all the way through. Now, if you left the turkey breast in there for long enough, the turkey breast will, just like any protein that has heat applied to it for extended periods of time, will really start to denature and almost become mushy, right? Which you don't want. So I cook a turkey breast for 4 hours at 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and I've never really had an issue with it when I retherm it and leave it in my circulator for about an hour, hour and a half, right? I've never had it degrade in quality. So again, this means while you're getting all this other, I mean, it can be like herding cats sometimes on Thanksgiving Day, right? You're stirring the gravy, you're, you know, making sure it's not lumps, you got somebody overworking your mashed potatoes, you got to get the kids all, you know, at the kids' table, and there's all sorts of stuff that you got to worry about, right? So this really helps your timing, because your turkey breast is in the circulator after 30 minutes, it's fine, it's ready to serve, it's warmed all the way through. So then the most important component of your Thanksgiving Day turkey or your Thanksgiving Day meal is something that you don't have to worry about any longer, right? Because you know it's perfect. And that's the beauty behind the sous vide technique. Now for a turkey leg and thigh, if I'm going to be cooking at sous vide, I like to do 145 degrees Fahrenheit, 63 degrees Celsius, which is a little bit hotter than my breast. And I do that again for about 4 hours. You can do 4 to 6 hours. And that's just because, again, there's more connective tissue in the turkey leg and thigh. So it's going to need a little bit higher of a temperature to help to break that down. And my favorite way to do it is to do a roulade. So what I'll do is I'll take the leg and thigh, I will debone it fully, season it from the outside in, so just season both sides really. And same thing applies, like we were talking with spatchcocking. When you break down your turkey, you want to do it a couple days in advance, right? So that way you have the time to actually make a stock. So then on Thanksgiving Day, you have that stock ready to rock if you want to use it for your gravy or your stuffing. So because I'm breaking my turkey down a couple of days in advance minimum, I'm going to salt the breast, salt the leg and thigh, again with my same dry brine ratio of 0.75% to 1% by weight. And that's going to season my bird all the way through. And that's also going to, again, hold in that moisture content while I cook it. So with the turkey leg and thigh, during my breakdown process, when I remove the leg and thigh from that turkey, I'm going to debone it, remove all the feather bones, salt it on both sides, and then let it sit in my fridge at least overnight. The next day, I will make my roulade, and you can just simply roll it up with the skin on the outside, and you'll have a roulade. If you want to get fancy, you can use a meat enzyme called transglutaminase, and you dust the meat with that meat enzyme, and when you roll it up, the meat will bind to itself during cooking, which is just going to give you cleaner-looking medallions when you slice it. I'll go ahead and put some links in the show notes to transglutaminase and a couple of technique videos I've done with in the past. But that's purely optional. And again, you can sous vide the turkey leg and thigh in the roulade form a couple of days in advance as long as you don't break that seal on the back. So once I roll the leg and thigh up, skin on the outside, I'm then going to roll it in plastic wrap and twist it nice and tight and then tie both ends. That's going to help to hold its shape during the cooking process. Then I'll take a cake tester and poke some holes in the plastic wrap so that way any air that got caught up during the rolling process will escape and allow my roulade to sink. And if your roulade doesn't sink, sometimes there's just air in there that you can't really get out. Just put a couple of plates over the top and let it sink down. And then the day of, what's beautiful about this technique is I'm treating my breast separately from my leg and thigh. But now, the day of, they're both perfectly cooked, both at different time and temperatures. Now I just have to retherm them. So the way that I do that is I set my bath to 60 degrees Celsius, 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and about 30 minutes out from being ready to cook and serve, I will drop both the roulade and the breast into this warming bath. Now the breast, I'm just going to slice and serve as is. And if you've ever had a breast that's been properly dry salted or brined, and then cook sous vide in butter with dried apricots and thyme, all you got to do is slice and serve it. There's not, I mean, you don't really need a whole lot of bells and whistles past that. Now, the roulade is a bit different because I have that skin on the outside, so I want to crisp that skin. So I'll leave the breast behind in the bath and just kind of let them hang out and pull out the roulades once they've been in there for a half hour so I know they're warm all the way through. Pull them out of the plastic wrap and let them rest on a clean kitchen towel and kind of dab the skin dry. Now, the best way to finish this is after you let it rest for a few minutes is just to fully submerge it in hot oil. You want to deep fry it, okay? And you can use a wok, you can use a pot, but you want to deep fry. And because the leg is already perfectly cooked all the way through, right? Your roulade is already perfectly cooked. The temperature at which you deep fry is going to be high. You're going to want to use about 380 degrees to 390 degree oil. And you're going to fully submerge it just long enough to brown and crisp the skin. Pull it out, drain it, and slice it. All right, that's the best way to do it. You can also pan fry it as well. And I've done this in the past where you're just rolling the leg around on all sides in the pan with the oil. And it's not as, it doesn't cook as evenly, but you can still crisp the skin and get a good end result. Now, also, too, you can take the roulade while it's cold, so you don't actually re-therm it in the bath, and you roast it in your oven in a roasting rack at a very high, hot temperature, usually as hot as the oven can go, 500 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's going to crisp the skin and give you a sliceable roulade, but it's really the least effective of the three techniques. Now, the downfall to frying, which is the best technique, is you have to deal with having a pot of oil on your stove unless you have like a fry daddy or something on your countertop, some sort of countertop fryer, right? But if you have the wherewithal to finish this roulade in hot oil by submerging it, you're going to have an awesome result. That skin is going to crisp beautifully and evenly. Once it is crisp, you want to pull it out of your deep fryer, out of that hot oil, roll it around on some paper towels, and let it rest just for a couple minutes right before serving. And you can see that this is going to give you a really beautiful presentation with a streamlined execution. Because we're taking something that is usually the failure point of any Thanksgiving meal, which is your turkey, right? And the timing of that turkey, of making sure it's going out hot and it's not dry, it's not undercooked, it's not overcooked, right? We're taking that failure point and we're taking away all those things that are going to make us fail. All those conditions that we would normally stumble over by using the sous vide technology, by using an immersion circulator. So again, it's just a real quick pickup. You retherm your roulade that's already cooked. You retherm your breast that's already cooked. Slice the breast right after you deep fry the roulade. Slice the roulade. And then you shingle them and present them on a single plate. And you are going to be hitting a massive home run on Thanksgiving Day. And by the way, immersion circulators, they used to be extremely expensive. Now they've come down in price dramatically. You're looking at models like Anova and Sancerre are both sub $200, and they get really good reviews from people who use them. So they're good home units. And I mean, look around your kitchen and see all that stuff that you spent so much money on, and you know, $170, $175 for an immersion circulator really doesn't seem like that much. Now, with that said, when I shoot my turkey videos with the turkey I bought today, I will not be cooking them sous vide because I want to have a broader appeal. I understand that everyone has or everyone does not have an immersion circulator, and I don't want to be leaving people out of the party. Now, if I have, I probably won't have time before Thanksgiving to shoot a video on sous vide turkey. But I'll definitely try and get one done before Christmas if that's something you want to look into doing. All right, so just to recap, you want to stop roasting your turkey whole. You're going to have way more control over it if you break it down first and you treat the leg and thighs separately from the breast. Plus, you're going to have the advantage of making a turkey stock ahead of time, which you can use to make awesome gravy, stuffing, and all sorts of other amazing things. For your breasts and your legs, you're going to want to either brine it or dry salt and make sure that your bird didn't already come brined. It doesn't have an uninjected solution. Some good cooking techniques for the breast are pan roasting, slow roasting, or sous vide, right? And sous vide being the best one, 140 degrees Fahrenheit, 60 degrees Celsius for 4 hours packed with some aromatics. Your cooking techniques that you can use for legs are slow roasting, confit, roulade that you either roast or you cook sous vide at 145 degrees Fahrenheit, 63 degrees Celsius for 4 to 6 hours. And then you're going to want to finish that roulade by crisping the skin somehow. The best way to do that is by frying in 390 degree Fahrenheit oil long enough to crisp the skin. And again, make sure that you're patting the surface of that roulade dry before dropping it in the hot oil because you don't want to have just an explosion, basically. Hot oil and water do not mix, in case you do not know. If you are stubborn and you absolutely insist on keeping your turkey whole for roasting, then I would highly recommend that you do the spatchcocking method where you're taking out the backbone. The most convenient way to cook the spatchcock turkey is make sure you're brining it first or dry salting it first and letting it sit overnight, following the instructions for brining a turkey. And then you blast at a high temperature until the internal thermometer placed in the leg and thigh portion reads 155 degrees Fahrenheit, and the skin is a beautiful, crisp, golden brown. Now, you can also slow cook the turkey at a very low temperature, maybe 225, for hours, right? It's going to take a while until that internal temperature reaches 150 degrees Fahrenheit. Then pull it out, let it rest all the way back down to an internal temperature of 100 degrees Fahrenheit, crank your oven up to 500, and then blast it just long enough to crisp that skin. That's going to give you more control over the whole cooking process, and that low and slow heat is going to help to drive moisture out of the skin, giving you a crisper end result. But cooking it in a two-stage process might also bottleneck the workflow in your kitchen. So you want to visualize the other things that you're going to be having on in your kitchen at that time and decide whether or not it's right for you, okay? But if you're going to spatchcock, if you brine your turkey or you dry brine it a couple of days in advance, right, and you have it ready to go, blasting it at 500 degrees or 475 in your oven until you reach an internal temperature of 150 to 155 degrees Fahrenheit in the leg is going to be the best way to roast that bird whole. My contribution be most definitely political, subliminal, partially, hardly any filler of that about the process. I'm thinking progress over literary garbage, harness. These words sicken me, the future set up a bet. Even when dealing with the corporate structure, power is given up to those who repeat the beat. All right, well, check it out. That was a lot of info about turkey, a ton of info. And we're just scratching the surface, really. I wanted to give you a broad perspective of the information that you need to understand to produce a good turkey on any given day of the year, but especially on Thanksgiving. So we're going to split this up into a two-part episode. We're going to end this episode here. And in our next episode, we're going to be talking about the major side dishes, gravy, stuffing, mashed potatoes, and also your execution workflow. So how to get that food out so it's all timed together. Now, in the meantime, I do have a couple of quick announcements that I want to make you aware of. First of all, we have a brand new website design on stellaculinary.com, way, way overdue. And the organization, it's looking beautiful. It's way easier to find things. So when you go check out this episode's show notes and you're poking around, you're going to notice that it's a lot easier to find all of our content. Now, I also, too, I have two brand new podcast series that are available on iTunes. One of them is called Stellacast, and the other one is Ask Chef Jacob. Now, Stellacast is just a kind of a loose conversation of me talking to other people in the industry. Sometimes I just turn on the microphone and record myself talking or basically answering forum questions live as I would read through them. So it's a very casual style podcast that covers all sorts of different things within the industry. So industry news, interviews, all that sort of stuff. And in fact, I have coming up on my next episode of Stellacast, which will be published in the next few days, is an interview with my good friend Hank Shaw, who is the mastermind behind Hunter Angler Gardener Cook. It's an award-winning, or James Beard award-winning food blog that he writes, and he has two cookbooks out currently, and he just is getting ready to launch his third cookbook called Buck Buck Moose. So he's an expert in foraging and wild game and all sorts of, I mean, the guy's an amazing cook, a true culinary gangster. And so he was on the podcast. I just interviewed him this morning and had a really fun time chatting with him. So that's going to be released on our next episode of Stellacast. And also, too, coming up on an episode of Stellacast, I'll be talking to forum member Mucho Bocho, who is an extremely accomplished cook, and he's going to be giving us tips and tricks on his Thanksgiving. Now, the other podcast series, Ask Chef Jacob, is just like how it sounds. It gives you a chance to ask me any questions that you may have about cooking, the culinary arts, even the restaurant industry. And if you go to askchefjacob.com, or you just go to stellaculinary.com/ACJ, which is the short code for Ask Chef Jacob, you'll notice that you can, you know, submit a comment there. You can either, you know, do it through the form. You can email me, jacob@stellacolinary.com. If you ask me a question through my email, you know, I can answer it for you on the Ask Chef Jacob podcast. But also, too, there's a cool little widget that if you click on that widget, it will allow you to record your voice through the microphone on your phone, your tablet, or your computer. And they do something really awesome with their software that makes the recording a lot more clear than if you were just to use your microphone as is on your computer and email me an MP3. So whatever they do with their software, they not only make the recording better, but they make it a lot easier. And if you go to stellaculinary.com, you look at the sidebar on any page on the website, and you're going to see a little widget that just says, Ask Chef Jacob a question. You click on that, it's going to record your voice, and it will send it to me directly. Then I can play that question on an upcoming episode of Ask Chef Jacob, and I can answer it for you. Real quick before we go, your homework assignment for this episode is to do one of two things. Number one is to think of a brilliant question that you can ask me about Thanksgiving, because I'm going to be doing a Thanksgiving-themed audio podcast, a culinary Q&A based upon your questions. And you can ask those in this episode's show notes over at stellaculinary.com/SES24 or by clicking on the Ask Chef Jacob widget, okay? Now, if you don't have a question, then I want you to leave a comment with your best Thanksgiving Day tip or memory. And the memories are cool because those are very powerful things I think can heavily influence and spark creativity in other people, right? So something along the lines of, you know, my grandmother used to make a dish like this, or, you know, my dad used to make a stuffing like this. And just let us know what your favorite thing about Thanksgiving is, from the company to the food, whatever helps to really create that experience. Because as cooks, that is our job, is to create experiences and to create memories surrounding food, right? But food is really just the gathering place to create those memories, right? So head on over to this episode's show notes and talk about, you know, what's your favorite Thanksgiving Day dishes, side dish, or any pro tips or tricks you have for us, whether it's cooking turkey, your approach to stuffing. And I'm really looking forward to reading through all your comments and hopefully featuring them on an upcoming episode, which I will be recording very soon. And that's it for this episode of the Stella Corner School Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate you guys all tuning in and listening, and all the feedback you guys give me on the forums, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. This episode's show notes can be found at stellaculinary.com/SCS24, where you can find supporting links, articles, lots of videos. And until next time, this is Jacob of the Stella Culinary School Podcast, reminding you to cook with passion.